Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Are you looking to make some improvements around the house? Today on the show, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is ready to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise and answer your questions. It's always a popular show, so call early. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. You got a home improvement question, now is the time. Darren Tracy will be here, and we'll get to your home improvement calls right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Let me tell you about my house. I'm pretty convinced that my house was a 10th grader's shop project from 1940. I'm further convinced that the student got a C- on the project. Yeah, it looks like a house. But you dig deeper, and things are just not quite right. So, whenever I embark on a home improvement project, it takes 15 times longer than it should. If the manual says, an hour and a half, then it's 2 days and 17 trips to Lowe's. And if I tell my wife, it's gonna be a piece of cake, she rolls her eyes and says, no, it's gonna take 2 days and 17 trips to Lowe's. And she's always right. Why? Because my house is a shop project. Should have called Darren Tracy, and good thing he's here today. He's a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, property management. He's a licensed master plumber. He is an expert on all these things. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. You got a question for Darren? Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back.
Hi, Ray.
How's it going, man?
It's going pretty well. That was a funny introduction about your house.
That is exactly, okay, maybe it wasn't a kid's shop project, but I got to tell you, we put a ceiling fan in the bathroom. It's 17 years old. We put a new one in. Told my wife, piece of cake. No way, man. There was a lot more to it than that. So I always find that it's better to call a professional than to try it yourself. But since you're here, you might as well give out some advice.
Okay.
All right. So anything you want to touch on before we get going with the calls?
Yes, I guess I'd like to mention that local engineering organization that I was a part of a couple of weeks ago, I gave a presentation on that 1870s tiny house in Glens Falls that we renovated.
Yeah.
And I gave that presentation for the purpose of continuing education.
Yeah.
And along with several other programs, and over 2 days. And we raised $40,000 that
wow.
Every penny of it is going to be given out to STEM organizations in the Capital District region. So.
Well, that's
I'm happy
fantastic.
About that.
Well, congratulations on that. That is a great thing. And what you did with that little house was amazing, too. So that's a nice, you could almost put it on your mantle. It's so small. But, it's a nice trick. It's a nice thing you did. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Tim is in Williamstown. Tim, you're up.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. My question is about general maintenance of a home. My wife and I was gifted a Habitat for Humanity house about 8 years ago, and we're brand new homeowners, and I was just inquiring about general maintenance. Is there anything from year to year that I should be doing, as far as the heating system, plumbing system, electrical? Everything was brand new 8 years ago, and new homeowners, and just it doesn't come with an instruction manual.
Right.
So just inquiring about general maintenance.
Hi, Tim. Unfortunately, there are lots of maintenance tasks associated with home ownership. Just quickly, some of the general items. Your heating system needs to be attended to at least once a year, checked out. Are you in the country? Do you have natural gas or oil, or how do you heat your home?
Yes, just natural gas.
Natural gas, okay. So your natural gas boiler or furnace should be inspected and cleaned once a year. Routine items around the outside of the house, if you have gutters, clean the gutters, or have somebody clean the gutters. Try to keep the water away from the foundation of the house. Over years, people tend to landscape next to the foundation of their house, and it tends to build up and create a dam around the perimeter of the house. So
Okay.
any water that falls off the eaves can't shed away from the house. That's a big item that I see often. And water is the enemy. Water is the
Okay.
enemy. And then after your house is painted, keep up on the painting. It's better to keep up on it than to let it go, and then wood could rot.
Sure.
Those are some of the main items. You've got quite a few years left before you need to be concerned about roofing. That's usually 15 or 20 years out.
Okay, my main concern was the heating system. I wasn't sure if I was
Yeah.
supposed to be doing something with that, and I was getting a bit nervous, so obviously I do need to tend to that this year.
Okay, I should mention that you said you have a natural gas system. So the natural gas either heats up hot water for a hydronic system, or it heats up air in a plenum. If it heats up air in a plenum, then you'll have a removable filter, air filter, that should be changed several times a year. Do you know if you
Okay.
have forced air, warm air blowing through, or do you have hydronic hot water baseboard around the perimeter?
I have forced air.
Forced air. Okay, so definitely should change that filter once a season. So,
Okay.
that's a good takeaway from your call.
Hey, Tim, thanks a lot and good luck with the new home. Nice job. 800-348-2551 is our number. Darren Tracy is our guest. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement today on Vox Pop. And we go to Stefan in upstate New York. You're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have project going a breezeway between my garage and my home. It was put on a concrete slab, and unfortunately, the contractor did not put anything down under the sill plate. And now it seems that the sill plate and maybe creeping up the studs, maybe 3 or 4 inches, you could see water where it's getting wet. What can I do to water tight that bottom sill plate that's sitting on the concrete slab?
Okay, for the listeners, a sill plate is a board laid flat on a foundation or flat concrete surface and is the starter point for framing your walls. That sill plate should be made out of pressure treated lumber. Do you know if it is?
Is they
Stefan?
used actually larch wood.
Larch.
They use larch, which is also called tamarack, and it's somewhat weather resistant, but without a preservative added, it's not weather resistant and rot resistant enough. There are some products out there. One name brand that I'm not promoting, it comes to mind, is Cuprinol, Cuprinol. You could coat the wood with Cuprinol. The products that they sell now are not quite as effective as they used to be a number of years ago because of some of the leakage out of the wood into the environment. But they do have a product that would help preserve your sill plate. Cuprinol, you can try to keep water away from that area the best you can, and that's about all you can do, really.
Really. I even tried spreading some Karnak or roof black tar roofing compound to like coat and seal. So
Right.
that's
That could be a
probably
double-edged sword.
right.
That could possibly work, but at the same time, it can trap water in too. Right.
Okay.
Karnak.
Okay. Now, how do
And
you spell
in
that
the industry, they
Cuprinol?
call that Cuprinol.
Ah.
It's a wood preservative.
Okay.
C U P R
And
I
how
N
do you spell that
O L.
one more time, sir?
C U P R-I-N-O-L. There are other manufacturers, but that used to be the Cadillac of wood treatments years ago. And as I mentioned, they do still have a good product out, but it just doesn't have as nasty chemicals in it now as what it used to. Nasty for the environment, effective for preserving the wood.
Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Home Improvement Today on Vox Pop. If you have a question, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back. Little Grant Green for you here on Vox Pop. It's a home improvement program today with Darren Tracy. The number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Darren, and we go to Heather in Salisbury, Connecticut. Heather, you're on.
Okay. Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an old house, 1848 clapboard house. It was part of an iron mining community in Salisbury. And I've had it for 50 years, but over the last 5 years, maybe a little longer, I have terrible problems with the storm doors. There doesn't seem to be any decent wood that you can buy these days. They both face west. My kitchen door opens out onto a gravel driveway. My patio door opens out onto a sunken patio. And the wood, you buy a new door and you sand it down. My last person I had working for me, he spent a long, long time sanding the door before it was hung, doing it all correctly. He put oil-based primer and then more than one coat of top coat. Mm. He stored the storm doors, the windows for the winter, and when we came to put them on, they had both swelled and had to be sanded down. I think he used a chisel on one of them. He just could not get it in. Mm. And the local hardware stores, lumber yards, tell me there's no decent wood anymore. What's the alternative? I don't want metal. Do you know any other product? I was told there was something called AZEK, but I've Googled that, and I can't find out much about it.
Huh. No good wood, Darren?
No.
Okay. Okay. Heather, AZEK is not a wood product. It's a composite, okay, man-made product. It sounds like you're doing everything you can do. I was going to mention that you need to prime the wood with an oil-based paint. You said that. So that's great step number one. And you want to prime every surface, all
we
six
did.
Surfaces.
He did an amazing job. He spent hours on it.
Okay. And then after that, you want to top coat that with two coats of latex.
That.
Two coats
we
of latex
that.
Paint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's about as good as you can do.
More.
And you should be able to get 5 or 6 years out of that type of a paint job.
But I'm not.
Now, I'm not sure the species of wood that you use, but cedar would be the best or one of the best species of wood. Because
I think it might have been pine. It came from the local lumber yards, and I'm not sure it was cedar.
Okay.
I would know it by the color, wouldn't I?
Or the smell. The smell has a distinctive smell.
You're
spending that much time and labor to do a good job on the next door replacement, I would make sure it would be cedar. Even if you have to have somebody make that for you, it's not that difficult to make one. Make sure it's out of
custom size, but you know, ready made from the hardware lumber yard.
Right.
You could try one of your better quality building supply stores. They might be able to get a wood storm door made out of cedar. But if not, if you find a local carpenter, they're not that hard to make. But that's the key, cedar, clear cedar. Western red cedar is a nice product to work with. And you'll probably get twice as long of a paint job out of cedar versus pine. And then
until this started happening, I had them from 78 on, and then suddenly 10 years ago, the first one on the patio, I had a dog, and her exit was from that patio because she had a electric fence, and I wouldn't be able to open the door in the winter. I know I would to kick it. Well, that finished that door, and I'm not surprised. Okay. But okay. You know, I've had the dogs I've had two doors since then, and the back door has suddenly started doing the same thing. It was replaced, and the wood's no good anymore.
Well, you're not kicking those doors, are you, Heather?
No.
Okay. All right, Darren, you want to follow up here?
I do. Thank you. Right. Another attribute of cedar is that it tends not to warp when it gets wet and dry. Yes, that's another great attribute of cedar. And even if the paint does start to fail on your cedar, it's naturally rot resistant, and the wood will not rot. So really, it's the way to go.
All right, Heather,
thanks a lot. More money, but it's the way to go.
Darren Tracy is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go to Sandy in Rotterdam. Sandy, you're on.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I call in frequently. It's a great show.
Well, thanks for doing it.
I have a question about my elderly mom had a furnace put into her house approximately 12 years ago. I am now living in the house, and this winter, much to my consternation, I discovered that when they installed the furnace, that instead of venting it to the outside, they vented it into the fireplace chimney, so I am unable to use the fireplace.
Oh, boy.
Now, is that a standard thing to do? I've tried calling these people numerous times, and no one will call me back.
Darren.
No, that's not a standard thing to do. It's not advisable, especially if you're using the fireplace too.
She wasn't because she was stopped using it. But then, you know, she was living there by herself, so she wasn't using the fireplace. So I'm just thinking that they just took advantage of an elderly woman and did a shoddy job.
Sounds like it.
Well, if you have a fireplace and you're committed to not using it, and somehow you need to barricade off the opening, you could use that flue if you used a liner, and the liner extended up through to the top of the chimney. You could use that.
So we would have to line the chimney with a new liner, and then we'd be able to use it.
Yes, it's a stainless steel. It's a stainless steel liner, and it's not difficult to install. It's relatively expensive, but it's one long piece that you drop down through from the top to the bottom, and you could tie it into your furnace that way. But somehow you need to isolate the fireplace itself so that it could never be used as a fireplace, because you wouldn't want to be using it both as a fireplace and a
I have it weatherproof for the winter. Styrofoam and all blocked off, and I'm not using it. It's covered up entirely. But
I'd have to see the details too on that. It's not typical to do. You really need a liner, stainless steel liner.
What's your question, Sandy?
Well, because they, I had a furnace put into a house I owned, and they took a gas furnace, and they vented the pipe right out through the side wall of my house to the outside, which is what.
Okay, this is a different types of system. That's a high efficiency system that can be vented out through the side of the house. And another type of system that can be vented in the chimney is a natural convection vent. And I should say, sometimes chimneys have multiple chambers. If they have multiple chambers, then you could use one of the chambers that's not being used for the wood fireplace as a flue.
Okay.
So I guess I'd have to take a look at it too.
So what kind of person should I call to fix it? Well, I mean, would I call just like a general contractor or a...
No, you'd call a reputable heating company, a company that you purchase your natural gas or propane gas or fuel oil from. Well, the natural gas would be purchased from one of the major utility companies. Is it natural gas or propane or is it fuel oil?
Natural? No, it's natural gas.
Natural gas, yeah.
I mean, I think the people that installed this furnace should come back and do the repair the damage they've done, but I can't even get any. And if they've been in business around here for years, I won't name them, of course.
I'm glad you're not going to name them, Sandy. Thank you for that. Yeah. I was getting nervous. Yeah, don't do that.
I know better than that.
Thank you.
But they, I mean, they've been around for years and years and years, and I was really quite shocked when I found the paperwork of who put the furnace in.
All right. Well, you know, maybe what Darren says is true. Maybe it's a multi-compartmental chimney and everything's just fine. But, you know, somebody should take a look. Right, Darren?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I just thought it was, like, slightly crazy. But now I've got at least a direction to go to get it fixed. So maybe next year we can have nice fires again.
Ah, that would be great.
Let's get a reputable contractor.
All right. Thank you, Sandy. 800-348-2551 is our number. Darren Tracy is our guest today on Vox Pop. Home improvement, repair, maintenance, yada, yada, yada. Beth in Gilderland. Beth, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi.
In the last couple of years, my home has been getting a lot of nail pops on the interior walls, both in corners and along where the wall hits the ceiling. And some of the drywall tape is starting to split. And I'm wondering what causes these generally. The house was built in 1987. And is there any way to cosmetically deal with them? I've been told that I have to repaint everything. And, of course, I know it would be a messy job with all the sanding and stuff. So what is your take on the nail pops? They're mostly on interior walls. And also there's a lot of cracking along the wall and ceiling seams. And it's just getting worse.
Okay, Beth, you said your house is 1987 vintage or 1887 vintage?
1987.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Houses move and settle. Still, it's a relatively new house, you know, 30-plus years old. Soil settles, and over time, a house will still move. So your house could still be moving a minor amount that would cause those cracks. Also, wood is a hygroscopic material. It means that it can absorb water during a humid season and then dry out in a dry season. In the summer would be a humid season, and winter would be a dry season. So you get that, you've got that movement of wood, and you will see those pops from time to time. It's those two reasons would account for the problems that you're having. And unfortunately, even the best built homes over time have nail heads that pop in small minor cracks. And I'm talking about hairline cracks. If you have something that's more than a hairline crack, say a 16th of an inch or greater, then that's another issue. But unfortunately, it's just something you have to deal with from time to time.
And how about cosmetically closing them or
Well, on the cracks, you can use a tape, joint compound tape, and mesh might be better than a solid tape, and spackle over top to span the caulk. You could also use in the nail heads too. You've got to remove the loose joint compound that's started to pop away from the nail heads, and then re-spackle that. And use a really good product, the best product that you can buy. And if you're say in a corner of a wall, one wall meets another wall, you could utilize a top quality paintable caulk. And then you could leave your sheetrock tools in their drawer and just hit it with a really fine bead of caulk and then paint over that. Or if you do a really good job, you might not even, if your walls are white, you might not even need to get your paintbrush out.
All right, Beth, thank you so much. And good luck. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Julia is in Florida, New York. Julia, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question is very relevant to this winter. We have ice damming.
Right.
And because of that, we have a leak that's come in. It's a bow window, and above it, it juts out a little bit in the house, and it's the water's dripping, and now there's all water damage on the wood. So I called two contractors, actually three. They all said they would come, and then after I explained the situation, no one showed up. So I was wondering, my husband did rake the roof, but I think he waited too late. And I want to know what to do now and then what to do to prevent it.
Hi, Julia. You've got two problems there, the ice dam problem and then the contractor problem, getting somebody to show up and help you, right?
Right.
You mentioned a bow window or a bay window. Yeah, you mentioned a bow window or a bay window. They can be problematic because that area needs to be vented. That space below your roof sheathing needs to be vented. And just by virtue of the nature of the detail, it's difficult to vent that area. Because if you don't keep that area vented, what happens is the warm, moist air from your house rises up through as it travels up through your sheetrock and then in between your rafters and some insulation that in there. It's going to cool. And cool air cannot hold as much moisture as warm air, so it condenses out. And it condenses and on your wood, and the heat also melts the snow on top of your roof, and then it freezes and forms a dam. So that's where you really need that space ventilated. So you have, it serves two functions. It removes the air underneath your roof sheathing and gets rid of that condensation problem, and also cools your roof deck. So you need to get some ventilation in there. And even for tough areas, there are special types of vents that can be installed at the intersection of a roof and a wall, so that can breathe, and then you'd have a soffit vent. So air is going up through the soffit vent, traveling underneath your roof sheathing, and then it hits that detail that I was talking about at the intersection of your roof and wall, and exits that way. So it can be done. It needs care, and that should solve the problem. Of course, you need some insulation in there, too. You got to make sure you've got enough insulation as well.
Julia, thank you very much for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And Sebastian is in Kingston. Hello, Sebastian.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a question about my driveway. So I have a very deep driveway, basically about 71 feet. It drops 10 feet into my basement garage. And the driveway over time, the house was built in 2000. So the asphalt driveway, it was, you know, it just sat with 4 years where no one kind of took care of it. So there's a lot of dips. Since it's asphalt, I'm wondering, should I replace it with asphalt or should I make more concrete? Or is there something that I need to do, like, for the sublayer before I put either one of them on?
Sebastian, probably the most cost-effective method is to remove the existing asphalt, make sure that there's a good sub-base of compacted gravel, at least 6 inches, 8 or 10 inches would be better. That product is called Item 4 or Crusher Run or DOT Type 4, all the same material, but it's a crushed, graded subbase, and that's really a key to the strength of a blacktop project. And then you'd want to put a couple inches of binder and then 1 inch of top on top of that. So 6 to 10 inches of crushed gravel and then a minimum of 2 inches compacted binder and then an inch minimum of top. And then you need to keep the water away from problem areas. That's the most cost-effective, best solution. I won't say best, but most cost-effective solution for your money. A concrete driveway is a great driveway, but it's more expensive, more difficult to do, and also can be slippery, especially with the pitch that you're talking about, 10 feet and 70 feet. That concrete would have to be, when it's finished, it would have to be made coarse by a broom. Otherwise, that would be really slippery and a safety hazard. And asphalt has that natural friction surface built in. So that's my advice, Sebastian.
Sebastian, thanks for the call. Darren Tracy joins us today. We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll hit the home stretch at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Hey, you like soup? Who doesn't like soup? Tomorrow on Food Friday, Deanna Fox will join us, and we'll talk about how to make some warming, delicious, comforting wintertime soups, and that's at 2 o'clock. But right now, it's Home Improvement with Darren Tracy, and let's see, who has been waiting the longest here? Lisa in Duanesboro, Massachusetts. You're on. Hello? Hello, Lisa?
Hello, Lisa? Lisa? Are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear
yes,
you.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. Everything's good.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Sure.
We're trying to do a wraparound deck. Our property, the land where we live, is known for having substantial rock, but not too far beneath the earth. What's the best step to take to begin this process, or who do I contact for drilling down into that rock? It's going to be a substantially sized deck. Just wanted to know the best best way to go about it and what materials to use as well.
Okay.
For instance, there's something called tracks. There's some, you know, there's
right.
pressure treated wood. Are there other options other than those?
Okay. All right. Regarding the deck, there are two approaches to constructing decks. If you attach the deck to the house, then the footings need to be below frost. And typically that's 4 feet below grade. So your columns or posts would have to be buried 4 feet so that frost didn't affect those. Now, if you were on ledge rock, you would only need to go to the depth of the ledge rock. The other technique or approach to decks is not to attach them to the home. And by code, if your deck is not attached to your home, it does not have to have a foundation that is below the frost line. It can be what some people call a floating foundation or a floating deck. And that can save you money, and it can be functional, too. You still need footings big enough to support the load, but those are the two approaches. If part of the deck is attached to the house, the rest of the footings need to be below frost. Or if it's not attached to the house, it can be freestanding, and the footings do not need to be below frost line. Materials that you would use, Lisa, ground contact pressure treated for the posts and the stringers and the joists. Structural beams, all that is pressure treated. Now, for the you mentioned Trex for the top decking, you have some alternatives. Trex is a composite material, and it works well. It's quite a bit more expensive than pressure treated lumber, but lasts longer and there's less maintenance associated with it. And another option, and I mentioned cedar earlier in the program, you could utilize cedar material instead of pressure treated. It's naturally decay and rot resistant. That's more expensive than pressure treated lumber, but I think it's a little bit less expensive than the Trex. So there you go, Lisa. Good luck with it.
Lisa, thanks a lot for the call. Darren Tracy is here. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today on Vox Pop. Jerry is in Montague, Massachusetts. Jerry, you're on.
Hi, how you doing today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Good. Thank you so much. My question is a thermostat issue. It's the second thermostat that we've had. And when it's cold, especially at night or early morning, it will go up, like we said, it at 66. And then it'll just go up to like 69 on its own. And it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens often enough. And like I said, it's the second thermostat this has happened with. And I'm wondering if that, you know, if you have any information about that or thoughts about that.
That sounds a bit odd that you'd have a problem with two different thermostats. There might be an offset programmed into your thermostat. For instance, if you have it set at 66, it may not shut off the moment it reaches 66. There might be a delay, but I wouldn't expect it to be more than a degree. I wouldn't expect it to go up to 69 if you have it set at 66. So that's really a bit puzzling, because usually they're pretty good. There are a couple different types of thermostats. One of the old Mercury style, rotate them. And then there are electronic digital thermostats, which I really like, because then you can program them accordingly to set the heat back at night and come on a little bit before you get up in the morning and warm up. And I can't, believe it or not, there's a lot of people out there that do not have those. And I have a hard time understanding that, because, they cost a few bucks, but they'll pay for themselves within a year.
Yeah.
Right. And you'll have a more comfortable home, too. So.
Yeah, and we usually put it down to like 62 at night, and it seems to stay there, pretty much.
And then,
but when we put it up to 56 in the morning.
Okay, 62, and then what time, how many hours before you get up do you set it to 60, have it come up to 66?
Well, it's usually probably about 8 hours, maybe 7 or 8 hours before that it's at 62.
Okay, and then say you get up at 7 in the morning, what time do you have your thermostat programmed to set it to increase to?
We haven't used that feature, so we do it with we do that manually. So it usually depends. Usually around between 7:30, 8. But the biggest problem is when it's cold. That's what we notice. When it's cold, it just seems to, the blower keeps blowing, and or the fan, whatever. And so that's why it was puzzling.
Okay.
Well, right. Well, you can help yourself out by learning that programming feature, particularly when it's cold, because it takes a house, a structure, quite a while to heat up in colder weather. And,
exactly.
By the time it starts to get heated up, there's this like inertia effect, and like it's going to keep going for a little bit. And that's why you're having the overheating problem. But I'd really suggest to look into the programming of that thermostat, and you will save money and you will be more comfortable.
Jerry, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy joins us. Pat is in Niskayuna. Hiya, Pat. You're on.
Hello.
How you doing?
Hi. My question is, I need to know, what is HVAC? And if there is a health issue associated with being in a room during the winter where the smell still exists, even though the maintenance people said that whatever was wrong was repaired. So what is it? What is HVAC?
Okay, I'm going to let Ray answer that one, because I know he knows that.
It's heating and air conditioning and such. I'm not
sure. That's right.
What
heating,
is the V
heating,
stand
ventilate,
for? Oh, ventilation.
Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
Right, so that's not specifically a toxic fume. However.
No.
Darren.
Okay. So what is the smell? Is it like a new carpet smell, or is it a rotted wood smell?
No, it would be more to a carpet smell, and it's irritating my throat.
Mm.
Okay. All right. I mean, I'm trying to understand how this came about. Was there some product installed in your home, or is this recurring each year?
Well, no. I'm selling my home and moving to an apartment.
Ah.
And around October, I mentioned that I have to open the windows to clear that smell out, and maintenance said it was probably the HVAC. And he did something, but it still exists, but not as much.
Interesting. That might not be safe.
HVAC systems can smell, but it sounds like you've got something else going on. There might be a mold or mildew problem. This is a good time for me to mention that you could contact
contact me after the show, and anybody that has any questions that they don't have an opportunity, and I could take more time to try to troubleshoot this, but I don't want to do this on the air because I think it'll take too much time. Yeah. And you can reach me by, if you're on Facebook, you can search West Branch Engineering, or just on the internet, my website is West Branch Engineering as well. You can Google search that, and I'll try to help you out off the air.
All right.
Pat, do you got ready access to the internet over there at the house?
No. Not at my home now.
Okay.
And it's not connected at the apartment yet.
Okay. Well,
if you want to, I can somehow, Ray, if you want to get her my phone number.
All right, Pat, why don't you email voxpop@wamc.org, and I'll try to get you in touch with Darren, and he can try to help you figure that out. Oh, you don't have email.
That's what I'm saying. I won't be able to do that.
Oh, yeah. All right. Tell you what you do. Yeah, that. Everybody in the control room was looking at me like, Ray, you're an idiot. And they're absolutely right. No. Just call us after the show and come through to me, and I'll get you in touch with Darren, and we'll see what happens. Okay?
Okay. The same number, the 800 number?
No. What is our number? 1-8. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. 1-800-323-9262. Is that right? Yeah, that's it.
323-9262.
And just give me a shout, and I'll get you in touch with Darren. I mean, he's very nice to do this, but it sounds like you could be in some jeopardy. So let's check that one out. And, Pat, thank you very much for the call. Let's see here. Louise in Wurtsboro. Louise, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You betcha.
I have a boiler that may be not working very well. I think I'm paying a lot of money for my heat this season. And it's a Dunkirk. It's an old, I've only been here for 8 years now. But it was, of course, it was here when I got here. And I don't think it's really working that well, but I know I need a new oil tank. And I'm wondering, since I have radiators in the house, is there any other energy I could use besides oil? That's one question. And then I have other questions after that. I'm sure there isn't, though, right? If I have radiators in every room, I'd have to have them, you know, if I use electric, I'd have to have them dismantled and all that, right?
Louise, if you have radiators, you've got a hydronic heating system, which means water circulates throughout some pipes in your home, and that water is heated up in your boiler by oil. It sounds like there are other fuels that you could use. You could switch to propane, but you would need a different furnace to do that. You'd have to replace your existing
furnace.
Yeah, is there
anything, there's nothing else before. I'd rather not use, you know, oil that's going to, you know, not good for the environment. I'm really like an environmentalist. So.
Right. There are some other options. You could investigate geothermal systems, which use a heat exchange from the temperatures in the earth.
After my house is already built, I'm already living here, that would be very expensive to do, wouldn't it?
You bet.
It's expensive to do from the beginning, new construction, or at this point. It's an expensive system, but it is good for the relatively good for the environment. So another system, another alternative, you could install photovoltaic panels on your roof, and then sometimes you can
solar panels, Louise.
Solar panels.
Okay. Yeah.
And that will generate electricity, and then you can use that electricity to heat your home.
Right.
With baseboard electric heaters and heat pumps. Here's another system. It's called a split system, a mini split, and those are operated by electricity, and you can use those to both heat and cool your home. And that could be operated by the solar energy produced from your solar panels on your roof, your photovoltaic panels. So there's another option. Okay. And then I would go around and clean the baseboard heating that you have. Often they can get dusty and they're, you know, they're kind of out of sight, out of mind. But they have lots of little aluminum fins, and they pile up with dust and dirt over time, and the heat transfer is reduced. Ah. So if you clean those out, you can help yourself, and that doesn't cost you but your labor. The same thing with radiators. They can be dusty. You might have just radiators or a combination of radiators and baseboard heat. They can get dusty. If you can clean those out, they can improve the efficiency a few percent.
All right, Louise, thank you, and good luck with that. Let's see if we can grab a couple of more calls here before we wrap up. David and Saugerties. David, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Darren and Ray. So I wanted to piggyback on the person talking about the insulation and the roofing before. I just recently replaced my metal roof with a standing seam metal roof because the old kind had the holes and it was secured with screws. And we had leaks around two skylights. And the pitch on the roof is fairly steep. And the roof is about, goes back to 1990, the original roof. We removed the skylights entirely and roofed over them. So what remains are the cutout ports are framed out from the skylights. There's new sheathing and insulation everywhere on the roof except for where the skylights were, because it's a work in progress. The roofer put insulation in those cavities, and we had temporarily just covered the inside portion of it up with plastic sheeting until we could figure out how we were going to finish closing it off. But in the process, as the weather got colder, we had condensation, and it was dripping on the floor, and then mold formed. And I freak out about mold because, first of all, my wife's ill from it, and I happen to be a New York State mold assessor.
Oh, boy.
And I am trying to figure out what is our best approach to preventing the condensation from happening. We haven't closed it in or cleaned it up yet. There are baffles everywhere on the roof keeping the insulation from touching the underside of the decking, except for where the skylights were.
Okay. We have about 1 minute here, Darren, for you to give an answer.
Okay. Well, David, you've got to ventilate that area that's what used to be your skylights, and you can do that in a few different ways, but the bottom side of your roof deck in that area has to be ventilated. You could use drill bits and drill out the top framing member, maybe 1-inch diameter drill bits, and just put as many holes as you can. It's going to require a little bit of surgery in your part to access that, but that's the solution to your problem. And also get some sort of vapor barrier when you reinstalling the area that you have to open up. Make sure that you've got a vapor barrier, polyethylene, to help minimize the vapor, water vapor, being transported up through that area. But right, it's got to be ventilated.
Well, that is where we will have to leave it. Darren, Tracy, thank you so much for being here. And once again, how do people find you on the internet?
They can search West Branch Engineering. And actually, it's the full address is westbranchengineering.com. Or Facebook. They can search West Branch Engineering on Facebook, either of those two ways.
Well, great job, man. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
Support comes from Watercolors by Edith Schutzbury, Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylics and watercolors, paintings of people and pets. From emailed photographs, no contact required, edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, careersintransitionllc.com. Once again, thanks to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, and Ashley Lindsay answered the calls today. Thank you, Ashley. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Soup is good food, and we'll have some tomorrow. Deanna Fox will be here on a Food Friday, and we'll talk relaxing, comfortable, tasty soup right now. Stand by for the Capital Connection.